Hello.
Ooh, you sound awful.
I do sound awful.
Why do you sound awful?
Because I'm coming to you through AirPods, Bluetooth, something craptastic microphone.
Okay. Hopefully you're recording on a better microphone.
Yeah, the old 8-track that I've got lying in the shed.
Ah, classic.
No, there is a slight story as to why I'm talking to you through AirPods, if you're interested.
Okay. I am interested.
Somewhat of a captive audience. Well, I did tell you that my laptop had started just turning itself off around 40% battery when it was trying to achieve peak performance. It had been warning me to service the battery for quite some time already, but I had ignored it because I didn't really want to put a third-party battery in, because in the past when I put third-party batteries in laptops, it's always been a pretty bad experience. But over the weekend, I went away and then I came back on Tuesday and I took the laptop out of the bag and put it on the table, and I could tell straight away that something wasn't right because it wasn't sitting properly. So I cracked the bottom off and all the battery cells were looking like little puffy balloons. So I immediately took it into my good friend down the road who has my Apple TV and put a new battery in my phone. And he put a new battery in it. I don't know how new it was though, because I got home with the new battery and the laptop, well, the battery would behave pretty normally from 100% down to about 70%, and then it would be instantly dead. So I took it back to him. He put another battery in it, and this time it would get to 60%, and then it would suddenly drop to 20%, and then a few minutes later it would drop to 7%. So I took it back to him again and said, look, just keep it all weekend and just make sure whatever battery you put in there is going to go from 100 to 0 at a reliable rate. So we'll see what I end up with on Monday. But I was hesitant to put the battery in.
That is my
experience. Yeah.
Exactly my experience with third-party batteries in laptops. And I think a lot of it stems from the fact that people can just lie about the capacity of a battery, and they can even modify the firmware to lie about what the capacity of the battery is. So for all intents and purposes, it'll look correct and the computer will think it's correct, but it'll just die, you know, way sooner than it should. And I don't think I've ever gotten a third party battery that didn't do that to some extent.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you know if because a MacBook Pro 2015 looks like it has 4 cells in it. For it to go from 75% to 0, do you think it had 1 good cell and 3 bad cells? Does it use them in serial or parallel is what I'm wondering.
Well, yeah, assuming everyone's being honest about the capacity of the battery, then I believe it could be possible that 3 of them would be bad and that should still work. But I think it's also possible that there are 4, you know, real battery packs, but their capacity is a quarter of what they should be each. But I don't know. I don't know your repair guy, how honest he is or how genuine of parts he buys, but
he's a nice guy. And, you know, I paid him once and he hasn't asked me for any more money, and he's always very happily accepted my laptop back without putting any sort of fuss or any sort of blame on me, and he's always putting the blame on the supplier, sometimes you just get bad ones, so I'll buy another one for you. So at this point, he has purchased 4 batteries for this computer, the first one and then the second one, and now he's bought 2 more. And yeah, so he seems legit.
And my experience buying batteries is through even less legitimate things than that. It's like buying one off of eBay. You know, back in the days when batteries were replaceable parts on Macs and you could just order one and stick it in.
Yeah.
So maybe he has slightly more reputable sources than, you know, a battery that or buy on eBay and ships from China directly.
Well, he's getting them pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine he just keeps tons of 2015 MacBook Pro 15-inch batteries in his stock. He just operates right. out of his home. It's not even like a shop. So, he wouldn't be able to get them that quick off eBay. It must be an actual supplier.
I don't know. You're pretty close to China. You get the fast boat from China. You need batteries. The
fast boat. The ferry? Wasn't it a ferry that took me to China?
That's right, yeah. It's just a canal separating you from Asia, right?
You can basically throw things across the canal.
Speaking of boats from China, I know I said in the last episode that I had a friend that ordered the new M2 Air and I was going to play with it before this episode, but it has been delayed multiple times, and the last he saw was like 4 or 5 days ago now. It was leaving Shanghai, and he just got an update today that it is now in Korea. So that, 5 day trip from Shanghai to Korea
doesn't even seem like the correct route, really.
Right, yeah, I've never seen anything stop in Korea. At least no. coming to the U.S. It usually goes like Shanghai to Alaska to Kentucky to wherever it's going.
I mean, you could probably make a case from some part of China to Korea to Australia. Actually, I don't know where Shanghai is. Is it
yeah, I couldn't, north I couldn't point east at it.
China? There might be some parts of China where Korea makes sense on the way.
Shanghai is about it's about the most eastern tip of mainland China.
And is that in the north or the south?
It's like very central.
Oh.
I don't want to blow through topics, but speaking of maps, I'm going to be on the Apple Maps.
Why? And what do you mean by you?
Well, I was doing some back-to-school shopping with my daughter today, and we were out in Kansas City. We're actually right next to the stadium where the biggest soccer game is going to be held. And
the grand final of the 2026 World Cup, just to clarify.
Yeah.
But not actually.
A game of the 2026 World Cup.
Yep, okay.
Anyway, so we were out there. I was like, I'm a block away from that stadium, and we're pulling out of a parking lot, and an Apple Maps like street view or look around car drives right past us. So whenever the look around for that part of Kansas City gets put into Apple Maps, I can show you on a map where I am in my car with my daughter. So everyone who's looking for directions to the World Cup in a few years will see me.
And you'll be pointing the direction to the stadium, right?
So here's my problem. I was in very one track mind at the moment the car drove past, because I looked at it and I'm like, oh, that's an Apple Maps car. That's really cool. But I was on my way to get coffee. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to keep going to get my coffee. And it wasn't until it drove past, I drove into the coffee shop parking lot. I'm like, actually, I should really be following this around so I'm in every street view photo. And then I circled around Kansas City looking for it, and I couldn't find the car again.
Did you? For how long?
maybe 5 to 10 minutes. It wasn't that long, but I searched the near area.
They actually just materialize in and out of existence as they're required. They don't like drive around like off to their final destination.
Ah, okay.
That makes sense. It's a new Apple Maps tech.
Or it's at least the look around camera like extends and retracts, so when they're done it just looks like a normal car driving around again.
Ooh. That's quite a unit though. At least the ones I saw around here. I mean, it's probably the same thing, but it's like a box on top of the roof, right? It's a huge thing.
Yeah. This one was on the end of like probably a meter long pole coming off the roof of the car. So it was very high up. I don't know if it's a lower down car than they normally use, because it was just a car, and I know I've seen them using SUVs in the photos online, so maybe they've got to keep it at a standard height.
What sort of car does an Apple Maps mapper drive?
Oh, I don't know. It was a white one. I didn't pay attention to what kind of car it was, though.
It has to be white for some reason.
Mm-hmm. That's their brand identity.
It's a missed branding opportunity, though, because no one's going to connect a white car with Apple. They need to, I don't know, put a rainbow on it.
I mean, the Google logo. Cars kind of have a lot of rainbows, rainbow colors, or at least, like, you know, the four colors, the Google logo. So it could be confused if that was the case. So, and I don't know how much they want to identify their cars. Like, the only reason I knew it was Apple Maps is because they had that one, like, sticker in the window that said, like, maps.apple.com or something, and that was it.
It's free advertising, though.
Yeah, you'd think they'd... Maybe they don't want people messing with their cars, so they try to be understated.
Yes, that is a very good reason for not advertising it too heavily. As soon as you see a Maps car, like, people just stop what they're doing and do something stupid. And all of that's going to be blurred over or deleted or reframed.
Right. Yeah, they could have done something ridiculous, like follow the car around and want to be in every shot.
I've been trying to be a more active Apple Maps user recently, like correcting categories and upvoting and downvoting, adding pictures, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to, you know, create the positive cycle of updating it so people actually use it so that they update it and then more people use it and maybe one day
be the change you want to see, good. James.
I am the change. That is me this week.
I don't contribute much to Apple Maps. I do use it, though. I've completely gotten off of Google Maps in the last couple of years. I think my biggest contributions are just, like, I do the waypoints, like, oh, there's a speed camera here, or there's a police officer sitting here. I'll press the button when that's happening, but I rarely look up businesses on Apple Maps.
And that's why Google's so good, because businesses tend to keep their own information up to date on Google, but people don't care about Apple Maps. Like, I've actually talked to business owners, well, sample size of one in the last fortnight, but I was like, hey, your business is, like, totally wrong. Actually, no, in this case, it was completely missing from Apple Maps. And he's like, oh, Google Maps? I said, no, on Apple Maps. He, like, just gave me a shrug, like, I don't care. So I said, okay, I'll add it for you then.
Was this your battery guy?
No, this was the car wash guy.
Okay. I don't know what Apple Maps usage rate is, but I feel like it's getting pretty high. Like, businesses should care more at this point.
I think so, too. Yeah. But if you asked a business owner, like, do you keep your holidays or your opening hour information up to date in Maps? There's a decent chance they would be doing that for Google Maps, but I think there's, like, a 0% chance they're doing it for Apple Maps.
That's because keeping it up to date, you have to keep your business up to date in Google no matter what, because you want the search engine to return your business. And if you do that, you know, the Maps part kind of comes for free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. Apple Maps is the second most popular among mobile users with 10 to 12% of the market.
Yeah, it's not insignificant. That's crazy that 10% is second most popular.
I bet third is, like, Waze or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that would be my guess. Which is
still Google.
We had some... Well, I mean, we talked last week a little bit about my Apple Watch and it causing me wrist pain.
Right.
And we posted some photos of where we wear the Apple Watch on our wrist. Finger side of the wrist bone or elbow side of the wrist bone. Yours is very much finger side and mine's very much elbow side. I even had a comment on the show post on Reddit, r/bluebubblepod. Sample size of one again says that they put it somewhere in between. So I think we're at the extremes, David.
I think so. I mean, I think if you look at my watch, how it's sitting now with my elbow on the arm of my chair and my hand facing upward, you know, it's very far down my arm like yours is, but it's just because mine is so loose. It slides to, you know, whatever extreme, depending on how my arm is hanging. So I still think your issue is just that you wear your watch way too tight.
Yeah, well, that was actually an eye-opener because I messaged you something after the last show. Yeah, that's right. After seeing where you wore your watch, I thought, well, I'll put my watch on and I'll try and wear it in that position. And I was like strapping it tighter and tighter and tighter. And no matter what I did, it would always, like, just pop over my wrist as soon as the tendons in my hand moved. So I sent you that and you said, well, you know, it falls to that position. So that was eye-opening to me because I was trying to tighten it to that position, but you were actually loosening it for it to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, I have experimented on and off with wearing my watch loose enough for it to fall over that wrist bone. But mm-hmm. to wear it that loose is just so uncomfortable because it's basically freewheeling around my wrist at that point. Like half the time, just because of gravity, the watch is on the wrong side of my wrist. And there's no in between. It's either tight enough to stay there in one spot or loose enough to move up and down on my wrist, but also run circles around it.
Really? That's not an issue that I have at all. Now, if it did end up on the wrong side of my wrist, that would be very annoying. So maybe that's my tightness criteria. It has to be just tight enough to not rotate around my wrist. But maybe your wrist is more of a perfect cylinder than mine. And mine's kind of more of an oval shape. So it can't rotate around quite as easily as yours.
Mine's pretty ovular. Wait, that's definitely not a word for being oval shaped. I think that's more of a reproductive term. My wrist is... I don't think it's a perfect cylinder. Far from it.
And you have... You're still wearing the fitness loop, right? So that should be infinitely adjustable to the exact right tightness. So you should be able to find some happy medium, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah, so the... It's not called the fitness loop, is it? It's the... Velcro,
sport loop, maybe
sport loop, and I also have a completely different class of watch strap which I've tried, which is like a leather one with holes, like a fairly traditional leather strap. But it's the same case with that, loose enough to move up and down, is loose enough to spin around. So at this point, I think I have to conclude that I either invest time and money into different watch straps just to find one, or put it aside until I'm reinvigorated in the Apple Watch lifestyle.
You need one of those Apple Watch cuffs that, I think you can get like an Hermes one from Apple that, it like surrounds the whole watch. You know what I'm talking about?
I had one of those once for my Series Zero. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. It's just very feminine. Apart from that, it's fine.
Oh, I wouldn't think of them as feminine. I've only ever seen a guy wear them, but...
Really?
And you're now my sample size of two guys that I've seen wearing it. I've never seen a woman with one, but...
Yeah. All right. There's something for me to check out before the next show.
Yeah, that would hold it on the right side of your wrist, at least.
Yeah, it certainly would.
I don't see them anymore. It looks like the Hermes store on the Apple website doesn't have them. You get a double tour, though. Now, I think those are kind of feminine. They're very narrow straps.
Yes. So, the cuff one I had was like a combo where it would... I can't remember if it was one piece that would do different things or a couple of different pieces that you could join in different ways, but it was either a double tour, as Tim says, or a cuff. And the double tour... Double tour was quite feminine.
Right. I actually like the idea of it, but yeah, the straps are always just too narrow to be something that would appeal to me. So you can get them for like $20 though on Amazon, the cuff ones.
Yeah. Look, I should just try Amazon because then if it causes me wrist pain, I'll just send it back.
Yeah, there you go. And maybe the new watch size in another couple months will resolve all your issues.
Yes, it might do.
You could consider, you know, stepping down a size. I don't know if the smaller watch would be more comfortable on your wrist.
I suppose it depends. Is it the watch on the bones that's causing the pain, or like sitting between those bones that's causing the pain? Because a small one would exacerbate it, but if it was a between the bone thing, because it'd probably push it even deeper. Yeah, trial and error. I'll just have to play around. Yep. See what September brings. You know what I realized? I'm probably not here for Apple Watch and iPhone release day. probably be in Germany, and that's until mid-November. So I'm not going to be able to buy anything until like mid-November. Whoa. Yeah.
When are you leaving?
I'm leaving late September.
You might be close then.
Yeah, it'll be close, but possibly uncomfortably close.
September 13th will be announcement day. So the earliest I'd expect people to get the products is September 23rd. And that's if they're on time and not, you know, pushed out a month like some of them been in the last few years.
So I've got it, like, if it's 23rd, then I've got a couple of days before I'm on a plane.
Okay.
Could be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, just buy everything. Or you could buy it in Germany.
Yeah, that's got knobs on it, though.
The German watches have the knobs.
That's got digital crowns on it. No, it wouldn't be covered under the excellent Australian consumer law. Possibly have different cell bands, but probably not. If it's a cell watch that I get, it might not work in Australia. Like, I've had that scenario before.
Mm-hmm.
But vice versa. Yeah, and I don't want to do that.
All right. So I just get to brag to you about my new toys for 2 months while you're stuck in Germany.
Seems like it. Very small topic, but I've found... Well, I started using the Apple Podcasts app just to try a couple of things, and I found a podcast that had a subscription for something I actually wanted to have, which was to remove ads from No Such Thing as a Fish. So I actually subscribed to my first podcast plus. I couldn't even remember if that's what it's called when I was just writing into the notes before.
I think it's just called podcast subscriptions.
Okay.
But okay, so how does it work?
Yeah. Well, I clicked subscribe and it confirmed my subscription, and then like nothing happened. So I deleted all the downloaded episodes I had and re-downloaded them, and they all still had ads in them. So I cancelled the subscription. Okay. It's been my experience so far.
You must have been holding it wrong.
Yeah, clearly. Hmm. It's such a simple request. Like, here's a subscribe button and you will no longer have ads. It was so opaque. Like, okay, now what? What do I do? Do I have to do anything now? So I did the only thing I could think of to remove what was already downloaded and download them again. But
right,
what else do you do?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I just pulled it up because I had never seen the prompt before. But yeah, in No Such Thing as a Fish. You can join Club Fish.
That's it, Club Fish.
Ad-free episodes plus exclusive bonus content. And no description on how that works. Just literally a pay button and that's it.
And once you've paid, a new banner appears under the artwork in the app, saying, I think, subscriber access.
I have a free trial on mine. Did you not get a free trial for yours?
I certainly did not. I wonder what entitled you to that.
Being an American, we're just entitled to certain things. It's in the Constitution. Free podcast subscriptions.
Well, give it a crack for me and see if you can figure it out.
All right, I'll play with it later this week.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Love From has parted ways with Apple, officially.
To whatever extent they'd been working with Apple for the last few years. I know when Johnny Ive left, they made a big deal of saying that Apple was going to be, you know, his company's number one client. But as far as the products coming out of Apple in the last few years, they definitely scream, you know, Johnny Ive hasn't touched this because it's gotten bigger. So
bigger, heavier.
My feelings ports are not hurt. Right.
Some of the comments did say it was so that Love From can work with more customers. So apparently they were turning back some work because of potential conflict of interest with Apple's work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that extends from computers that we know about to, I'm sure there's probably some conflict with even like doing car designs, because I'm sure Johnny's had his hand in the Apple car stuff. So there's probably maybe even, I don't know. I know Johnny had a big hand, like his last big project was work on Apple's campus. Hopefully they wouldn't consider him working on other building designs competition, but who knows?
Yeah, it must be a gray line. It's probably quite a thick gray line. Like, oh, you're working with aluminum or aluminium? Well, that's stepping on all sorts of toes here.
My feelings are not hurt about Johnny Ive. It felt like a big deal at the time, and I probably made a big deal out of it on the podcast when he left. But in hindsight, things have only gotten better since he left. So, he had his time, and there'd been, you know, talk for years about his declining interest in his work at Apple. So he was already fairly hands off even before the official announcement of him leaving. And I think it went as smoothly as any transition could have.
On alongside the talk of his declining interest was the talk of his just like unfettered control over what he was doing in Apple, because once Steve Jobs died, even though Tim Cook was like the higher position, maybe on a hierarchy, I don't think he had any sort of input or say over what Johnny Ive was doing there, which led to perhaps some bad decisions. Well, undoubtedly some bad decisions being made because the reins, I suppose, were missing.
Yeah. For all the great work Johnny Ive did at Apple from the late 90s to the mid 2010s, a lot of that was thanks to it was at least in partnership with Steve Jobs being able to be kind of his checks and balances, because Steve said no to a lot of things, and without him there and Tim being very hands off of design products in general, Johnny got set a little too free.
Supposedly, there's not really much of Johnny's team even left at Apple these days. They've all moved on to other things. So, even though he's been gone for quite a while, maybe that hands-off period was actually even more than we think, and the people under him were continuing in his vision for years as well.
And that seemed to have been another sticking point with Apple, at least in this article here, is that it sounded like Love From was maybe poaching a few designers, or at least people that Johnny liked working with, ended up leaving Apple to work with him. So maybe there were some hard feelings there as well, as far as not renewing their partnership.
Is their website still just a blank screen?
There was a few months ago, it got updated to have like a really cool animation on it. I don't know if it's still there. It is. Yeah, lovefrom.com. It's got a very Apple-esque animating the logo in. And then it's got some kind of like mission statement, I think, if you scroll down. Yeah. Love From is a creative collective. We are designers, architects, musicians, filmmakers, writers, engineers, and artists. You may know us by our past work. We are obsessed with the traditions of creating and making, fanatically devoted to excellence, insatiably curious. We collaborate with leaders and founders. We work on projects for joy. We develop our own ideas. Love and Fury.
What does love and fury mean?
I don't know.
That's signed off at the end in italics. Love and Fury. Like, that's the person who wrote it.
Johnny started Love From with a partner. Maybe Johnny's love and his partner is Fury. Or vice versa. I've loved the products that have come out of Apple in the last few years. So any concern I had about Johnny leaving is evaporated at this point. And it seems like the market agrees as well, because Apple basically never took a hit from Johnny leaving, even through to now. So I think they handled that transition well, and no one was that seriously concerned about him leaving.
And you might say they have produced their best ever computer since then, and most recently, the M2 MacBook Air. I think you could make an argument that it's their best ever computer. What do you think about that statement?
I guess it depends on how you're measuring best. If it's best as in the best fit for the most number of people, I think that that's accurate. As far as a consumer products company, this is probably the best consumer computer they've made in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's not best as in the most powerful or anything else, but it definitely fits their idea of a computer.
Yeah, exactly. It's the best mass market computer ever created. That's quite a big statement.
That's an Apple-sized claim.
Yeah. Need more superlatives. It's tiny, it's light, it has amazing performance, amazing battery, amazing screen, amazing keyboard, amazing speakers, okay webcam, okay ports, but you can't complain too loudly about them. And they have, well, since we last spoke, it's been released, and all the reviews have come out and all that. And I think it's a fairly unanimous summary that this is the computer for everyone unless sustained peak performance is required, because that's possibly the only complaint you can make, is that if you're doing something that puts a maximum load on the computer for, and I think the reported average is like 4 to 5 minutes, after that time, you kind of need some sort of active cooling on it, because it's going to start to throttle itself because of heat. But apart from that, there are very, very few complaints to be made.
And I think a little bit of thermal throttling is a perfectly acceptable compromise in this entry-level consumer computer. Because even, you know, throttled performance is still a very performant computer. It's faster than what most people need for their average use cases, and doing any serious long duration work, you're probably not buying a MacBook Air in the first place.
I was actually quite shocked. Well, not that shocked, but I was surprised, I'll say, to see how the M2 compared to the M1 Max and M1 Ultra. For some reason, I just thought, look, the M2 is a new gen. It's going to be comparable or faster than those chips. But actually, the M1 Max and Ultra are still way faster than the M2 with no adjectives on it.
Right. Yep. The M2 is still very much an entry-level chip. I think as far as if you're looking at a single core versus a single core, the M2 is going to be a little better. But in most use cases, you're still going to be better served by a Pro or Max chip.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, all those ones have, they all have active cooling, don't they? All the Max and Pro variants? Yeah.
Right. Yep.
And the poor old M1 models without active cooling are being left in the dust, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it feels silly to say that, because the M1 was still a very impressive chip, and it will still serve 90% of people's use cases. The need for the performance of the M2 over the M1 would be very niche, especially in something like the Air. So I think if you're buying the M2 Air, it'd be more for the ports, the screen, the better design, and not the, you know, 10% performance boost you get over the M1.
Mm. Yep, yep, yep. People have already started modding the computer. I think it was the Max Tech channel. Yes, they put a thermal pad between the heatsink and the bottom case of the MacBook Air. So usually the heat is not dispersed using the bottom of the computer. Now, if that's for like a reasons. Comfort thing or a safety thing, because I know some countries do have laws about how hot that can be.
Right.
I think that's a reproductive health thing, that it can't get too hot on your lap. Could be wrong, but could possibly be right. And
probably a factor.
Yeah, and yeah, so there's an air gap normally, so the bottom case doesn't get hot or warm. Well, it probably gets warm, but not overly so. But apparently a simple bit of thermal material that manages to disperse heat from the heatsink into the bottom of the laptop will give you a not insignificant performance bump on that computer as it manages to stay at the max load without throttling for quite a bit longer.
I suppose if you were someone like me, like I own a laptop, but I 99% of the time use it on a desk. My laptop rarely sits on my lap. So that might not be that big of a deal.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. The only time a laptop sits on my lap is when I'm watching something on it, and that's never going to heat it up. So the example given, it was something like exporting images from Lightroom, and it turned a 2.5 minute operation into a minute 45 or something like that.
And did that eliminate thermal throttling, or did it just delay it?
I believe it just delayed it.
So have you ordered one yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I guess not if you're playing around with your MacBook Pro battery still.
just messing around with my 7-year-old, probably 8-year-old technology for a little bit longer. After seeing all these reviews come out, I am fairly convinced that the MacBook Air isn't for me because of the sustained performance and because the things that I do that require peak performance do tend to take a while. For instance, exporting from Lightroom or exporting from Final Cut. Yeah, I don't think the Air's for me.
So you're going to be buying a Pro?
Yeah, but that costs an arm and a leg, so... Hence replacing some swollen batteries in an ancient laptop instead.
Or you could get one in Germany and it comes with knobs.
What would that look like, David?
A digital crown on a MacBook. I mean, they put the digital crown on their headphones. They could do it on a computer, I guess.
Would it be the volume control?
Oh, I was thinking it'd be like a scroll wheel or something, but volume control would work as well.
Yeah. Maybe integrate a fingerprint reader into it as well.
You could put the EKG in there.
Ooh. This laptop's sounding better and better.
Won't settle for a laptop without a digital crown. I saw someone try to claim the other day, and I didn't note it down, but that they think Apple's getting rid of the digital crown. And their justification for that was the water eject option on the watch previously had been like if your watch was in water mode, you had to scroll the digital crown and it'd play that tone on the speaker to eject the water, and it would unlock your screen for touch input again. In the watchOS 9 betas, that gesture has been changed. You no longer scroll the digital crown. You depress it and you hold it for like 10 seconds, and then it does that. And they're saying that they had to change that because they're getting rid of the digital crown.
So for it to be a press and hold, you still need a button there. So,
right.
But so the difference is where it's not something that turns anymore.
Yeah. What if it was like a fake digital crown that you still like ran your finger along it as if it spun, but it didn't actually spin?
Why would the water eject gesture then not make sense? If you could still do
because
that.
Because it would be using touch sensitivity to detect that spin gesture, and the water would trigger that as well. So they have to change it to... It has to be a physical action and not one that's capacitively detected.
Of course.
I don't know why they would do that, but...
Well, it's probably very expensive to produce the digital crown. That's my guess.
But it's so iconic. It's the signature Apple Watch thing.
It is. I wonder if they have many failures on part of the digital crown. I know it does tend to get things stuck in it, but I've always had things come out of it pretty easily as well. I'm thinking most like dirt and sand and grit.
Mm-hmm.
But usually you can clear that out pretty easily. I've never ever had a digital crown not do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I've never had one fail on me. And I can say that with a little bit more weight behind it now that I've been using the same watch for 3 years.
Yeah.
I don't think I can make it 4 years, though. Battery life gets pretty bad after a while on these watches.
Mm-hmm. What if they are putting some sort of biometric sensor in there that means it can't spin anymore?
Ooh, like what?
I have no idea. So, they've already got the EKG in the digital crown, do they not?
They do.
What would be there that wouldn't spin?
The only thing that I know they're still working on is, as it's been rumored for years, is they're trying to do a blood glucose sensor.
Yeah, rumors have really dropped off on that front, though. But,
of course, that's true.
I imagine they're still trying. But the most recent one that I've heard of is the body temperature sensor. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why that couldn't spin. Unless, like, more chunky things need to get through to the crown.
It also seems like something you'd want on the underside of the watch so it can continuously take your temperature and not need... Because my watch can take an EKG, but I never do it because I've got to think about going into the app and holding my finger on there. So something that passively gets those measurements is way more useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Needs to be passive, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. My guess is just going to stay that it's expensive to produce a digital crown in its current state, so they're going to down a different avenue.
If they are making this rugged extreme sports pro version of the watch this year, maybe it specifically doesn't have any moving parts on it. I think there is probably some merit though behind that idea, because Apple doesn't usually change gestures or inputs like that unless there's a reason, and there's been many cases where they've changed a gesture and then gotten rid of the underlying technology that made the old one possible, thinking of 3D touch and force touch across their devices.
How did we get here?
I said the new laptops need a digital crown.
That's right. So the rumor for the next M2 chip is that it will be the M2 Extreme. And that's the one that's going to be in the Mac Pro coming out in September.
Is that September date outlined somewhere? Did you see that?
No, I think I'm just...
Or is that your guess?
Just my guess, because Apple's already confirmed it's coming this year. And yes, yeah, so September or October, I'll just lump them together. Coming later in the year then. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying specifically September.
Yeah.
I wonder if they would put it in with the iPhone event.
I mean, they usually have a second Mac event in either October or November, so I would probably expect it then versus alongside the watch and phone.
But the M2 Extreme, so current rumor is that it's going to be like the Ultra in that it's chips, M2s stuck together, but it's going to be a 2x2 grid, so it's going to have the interposers like on two sides of each chip and then form a little quadrant of M2s.
M2 Maxes, specifically. So, before M2 Maxes.
Sorry, Maxes, not Ultras. So, wait, it goes Ultra, then Max, and then Extreme?
No. No. Okay, so an Ultra is two Maxes. Ultra is two Maxes put together. So, an Extreme would be four Maxes put together, or two Ultras put together, however you want to think about it.
Okay, right. So, what's the difference between the M2 and the M2 Max? Just the number of cores and things.
So, yeah. So, the M2 Max would have more CPU and GPU cores. The M2 Pro would be the M2 Max with like half the GPU cores. The M2 Ultra is two M2 Maxes.
So, there's already Pro, Max, and Ultra, and then there's going to be Extreme.
Right.
Oh my god. No wonder I'm confused.
Yeah, completely arbitrary what order these go in. Because you could literally change the name for all of these chips and it would make just as much sense.
Yeah, yeah. But the main takeaway is it's going to be four chips all talking to each other, which we don't have in the M1 family at all.
Which seems to be not possible in the M1 family.
That's right.
Because they only have the single side with an interposer. So, the M2 has got to be designed with two interposers to be able to do the 2x2 arrangement.
Yeah, okay. And alongside that, the interposers have the ability, apparently, to talk to off-chip memory as well. So that would mean mm-hmm. that the Mac Pro could have extreme amounts of memory, like a terabyte of memory, that wasn't necessarily the stuff that came with the chip. So thinking memory banks on the motherboard.
Yeah, which makes sense, because assuming the M2 Max has the same RAM cap as the M1 Max, that means an Extreme would have up to 256 gigabytes on the chip, which is nowhere close to the 1.5 terabytes you can currently get in the Mac Pros. So they have to figure out some solution to make those comparable.
And it's probably going to be like a memory tier thing. You know, the chip is going to manage, this needs to be in high-speed memory, and this can be in the slightly slower memory. There's no way that the
right.
the offboard memory, as I'm calling it, is going to be the same speed as the onboard memory. So it's just going to have some smarts to manage that.
Right, yeah. The high-speed memory ends up becoming like a giant cache.
Yep. Gone are the days of like 16K of L2 cache. Now it's like 256 gig of it.
I remember when the cache sizes were a big enough deal that Steve Jobs would say what they were on stage unveiling
really?
Computers. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Do you think it's going to be limited, this offboard memory, to Apple-produced modules?
That is a fair question. I hope not, because that would be very expensive.
And then they'd have to have their own slot design, you'd think, because you wouldn't want to have the ability to stick something in there that didn't work. I mean, it could just be as simple as moving the notch by a millimeter, but...
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's any reason they need to design their own RAM.
No. Wouldn't think so.
I think the bigger question would be is, if they wanted discrete GPU support, would they allow that to work with other GPUs, or would they design their own, you know, slotted GPUs? Because that's something I maybe would expect them to do.
I came across a rumor during the week that I hadn't before, which is that Apple actually had a code name for a discrete GPU alongside the design of the M1. But, of course, we never saw that.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
So it's quite possible that we'll end up with an Apple-designed GPU to plug into a slot in the Mac Pro. Whether that excludes AMD or not, I don't know.
What if this Apple GPU, you know, it's basically like plugging in another M1 or M2 Max or whatever. So you get another 128 gigabytes of RAM or something. And the RAM and the GPU are a single module that you plug in.
Yeah. They're just, you know, when they're going through the chip tests after they're produced and they notice that some of the CPU cores failed, but all the GPU cores are good. Ah, that'll make a good GPU. Just stick it on there one of those GPU boards instead. She'll be right.
Uh-huh.
not a bad theory, though.
That'd be the most, I don't know, in line with their silicon strategy so far, which is just like we make one die and we just scale it across everything.
Yeah, I think we'd probably have to do the calculations on how much RAM is on one chip already and what would that add up to in terms of GPU RAM?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So, we'll find out later in the year, I suppose.
Yep.
What was the next topic? So a little... I don't even know why I added this. It's just a tiny little thing, but in 15.6, Apple has removed the AirTag battery level indicator from the Find My app.
Mm-hmm.
Now, apparently it's quite inaccurate, and it would show people had low batteries in the AirTags, but then the battery would go on for quite a long time after, and it was just an inaccurate display. kind of like how the Macs with batteries used to have a time remaining indicator, but it would, of course, vary wildly based on whatever your current work load was. So instead mm-hmm. of trying to improve it, they just removed it. Seems they've done the same for AirTags. And it'll only show you the battery indicator when the battery needs to be changed. But the question, I suppose, is if it already had an inaccurate indicator for when the battery had to be changed, how would that fix that?
Right. Yeah, I've seen a lot of comments relating to this, complaining that instead of taking the time to fix their battery indicator, they just removed it, which is the lazy approach. But I think the real problem is these button cell batteries don't have an accurate way to determine remaining capacity. They're basically either good or bad. And that's been my experience. I haven't had the low battery, but last forever. But my AirTags, which I bought day one, so it's like a year and a half ago, still showed 100% battery until
wow.
I went to the betas and it's gone. Which is obviously not right. And actually, you know, I'm surprised they're still going strong, because what was battery life supposed to be, a year? So yep. They're still working. I don't have any indicators of them needing to be replaced, although maybe I should do it preemptively. But yeah, it's basically either those button cell batteries are good or they're bad. And so there's not really a good way to measure that, except for them to maybe do like a time-based. It's like, well, this AirTag has been on for however long, so it's probably due for a new battery. So I don't really have a problem with this. It's not something I've ever really paid attention to, except like the one or two times I've thought about, hey, it's been over a year, you know, how are my batteries? And it's always 100.
Yeah, it's not even something I think about, so I wouldn't have a clue what my car's AirTag battery was at, which is where my AirTag still is.
Mm-hmm.
No one's stolen the car yet, can you believe? I'm looking forward to the day.
Yeah, what a waste.
After that AirTag in the lost luggage story, though, strongly considering getting a few more AirTags for the trip to Germany in September.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah,
if I had any traveling, I would definitely make sure to have one in every piece of luggage.
Yeah, it's a fairly insignificant investment for that peace of mind.
Yeah, exactly. Assuming you get a cooperative airport, like in the report, you could just as easily know exactly where your luggage is, and the airport be like, too bad, we're not letting you back there.
Yeah, you just seem to walk through the airport, like in that story. Oh, here's the meeting room for, what was it, Swiss something, Singapore Airlines, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah,
I have seen a lot of people use AirTags to sneak into places. So this might be something that businesses are accounting for now. I don't remember this person's name, but there's a guy who's like, he makes a YouTube video every year of sneaking into the Super Bowl.
Oh.
And one of his more recent ones was he like threw an AirTag into the stadium over a fence somewhere, or he had someone carry it in. I don't remember how it got into the stadium, but he got an AirTag into the stadium, and then he went to walk into the stadium and either said, I'm looking for my phone, it's lost, here it is, and he had the AirTag named like iPhone or whatever with the iPhone emoji. Or he said, like, look, I already came in, I left my ticket and stuff inside, you can see like my phone's in there, I've obviously been in there already. He said something along those lines to get in, and it worked for those security guards.
Wow. That's not a bad idea, actually.
Yeah, pretty clever.
Yeah.
He's been doing this for, I think, over a decade now.
And does he always get in?
I don't know, because I don't seek out his videos. They just tend to pop up for me around the Super Bowl most years. So maybe only when he gets in are they popular enough that I see them. But every video I've seen, he's gotten in.
Very cool. Reddit user hacker developer just made a self-post on the iPhone subreddit that Apple should add a kill switch to private relay. So I just thought I'd make a talking point for private relay to see if you are using it now that it has been out for, what, a year now?
Yeah, because I think it came out in the last version of iOS. Mm-hmm. It's still in beta.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Yeah.
I have it turned on. When I turned it on initially a year ago, it was slow and I was having connection issues and I turned it off for a while. But I turned it back on, I don't know, 6 to 10 months ago, somewhere in that time frame, and have forgotten about it. And it works just fine. Now, like this person is alleging, it might cut out and stop working, but it's completely transparent whether or not that's happening to me, which is the way I would want it to work, because I don't want to not be able to access the internet. But that also means that I don't know when I am and am not securely browsing things. So I can understand maybe an optional kill switch as well for people who are more concerned about that.
So in the scenario, this user wants everything to go via private relay, and if private relay is not available, then nothing even goes out. So the internet is just stopped at that point, so that they always know that they are anonymous. Their traffic is anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys not get the pop-up that tells you when iCloud Private Relay is on or not?
No. You mean like when you go to every website, it gives you a pop-up?
No, like if my internet goes down, then I get a pop-up that says iCloud Private Relay is not on or something to that effect. And then the vice versa as well.
Oh, no, I've never gotten that notification.
Ah. It's almost like spam on my computer.
Maybe that means it always works for me.
Maybe.
Oh, you know what?
Mm.
If it's just a computer notification, not a phone notification, the one place I don't have private relay on is on my iMac that I'm using right now, because I'm still nervous about speed and I don't want it to interfere with the podcast. So I have it turned off on this iMac. And I don't know about my laptop, but I use it so infrequently that maybe if that ever happens, I just completely miss it.
It's also a notification I get on my phone, too.
Hmm. Okay. Then I don't know.
Hmm. So
it's just rock solid for me in the US.
So my experience with the private relay, like you said, when it first came out, it tended to be a little bit slow. But I do turn it on every now and then, but I find more often than not, it's within hours of me turning it on, it's breaking something that I do on a daily basis and it has to be turned off again. Like, that's how quickly something breaks for me. Whether it's, the two main ones I can think of, I'm using a service and the service now thinks I'm behind a VPN and won't give me what I'm there for. Because, it's just badly coded at checking what I'm doing, or maybe iCloud Relay really counts as a VPN. I don't know how you would class it, really. But the service doesn't like it, so it doesn't let me through. That's kind of fine because I can see what's happening. But the more annoying one is Safari just stops loading pages. So, go to blahblah.com and the little loading bar gets to 20% and then stops, and then you have to go through your head, like, is it Safari, is it my computer, is it the internet, is it the website? And then I think, oh wait, that's right, I turned on private relay this morning, go and untick it, and then everything's back to normal. And it's not just me either, because I turned it on for Yasmin on her computer when she was looking at flights. Like, I thought maybe being a bit more anonymous when you're looking for flights will stop any sort of dodgy price hike tactics by the airlines. Forgot I just left on then. And then within like a couple of hours, she came and said, like, blah, blah, website doesn't work anymore. Can you come and see what's going on? And it was iCloud Private Relay that was causing the problem. So it's been quite a miss for me. Despite wanting to use it, I inevitably end up turning it off.
Interesting. Yep, I've definitely left mine on for at least the last 6 months, if not more. And the only frustration it's ever given me is my banks don't remember my devices anymore. So when I'd have to sign in my bank, it always asks me like a security question when I'm signing in, and it always presents the checkbox like, okay, remember this device, but it doesn't matter because every time I go back, it thinks I'm a new device again.
And is that definitely private?
The bank is the only instance of that.
Is that definitely private, really, that's causing that? Because I've seen a lot of checkboxes that say remember me and don't.
Right. That is my best guess for what's happening, because my bank, it used to work. It didn't used to prompt me for a security question every time I signed in. Mm. But it was right around that time that it started doing it.
Mm.
But yeah, other than that, it works great. The only other way I can tell that I have private relay turned on is when I am signing in to my Apple account somewhere and I get the two-factor prompt from Apple. It gives me like a much more vague location. It's like a device is trying to sign to your account in this area. It's like somewhere within a 50 to 100 mile radius of where I am, instead of much more precise like it used to be.
Right.
So it's definitely working, and I have not had any website issues or random cutouts where I need to restart or anything like you have, apparently.
Yeah, and it only seems to be the Safari part of it, because you can turn it on for apps and Safari or just apps, and I've never touched the apps one. I believe that's always been on since Private Relay was released, and it's just stayed that way, and I've never had an app not do something and then be fixed as a result of Private Relay being turned off. So yeah, this is purely the Safari section of it that causes me issues. Issues. How do you say issues?
And do you have the maintain general location checked, or are you using the more generic, like just make sure it's in the same time zone?
I've always had maintain general location turned on.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I have as well.
Because you want that for most things.
Yeah, the general idea of where you are is good. If you're Googling like where's the nearest Walmart and it thinks you're, you know, a state away, that's not helpful.
Yeah. And as we know, 25% of the world's population lives in my time zone, so it's could be anywhere. That's my favorite statistic.
Is that right?
Yeah. GMT plus 8.
Is that because, maybe. Is that just China? Or
yes. Same time zone as China, or at least some of China. I didn't really know their time zones, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you guys are basically touching, so I would have assumed.
I mean, you don't even need a ferry because it's that narrow a canal. It's just a bridge.
You could just jump over it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And basically a small stream.
It's a moat.
Uh-huh.
Just to make sure everyone stays where they are. A moat and a drawbridge.
They got crocodiles.
Hey, nice, yeah. Not alligators. I thought you would have said alligators.
Not in Australia.
Exactly. I am JamesVDM on Reddit and Twitter.
And I'm JellyWoot on Reddit and Twitter.
And the show notes will be posted at reddit.com/r/bluebubblepod.
Crocodiles are a very common thing in the US too. It's not just an Australian thing. We have both. I don't know if you have alligators at all in Australia.
I don't believe so.
Okay. I couldn't look at one and tell you if it was an alligator or a crocodile. Something to do with like a few teeth look different or something? I don't know.
I was actually, for most of my life, under the impression that crocodiles were the big ones and alligators were the small ones. Which I then went on a an airboat tour in Louisiana, and I found out that alligators are actually massive. So I was expecting.
That sounds like a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've toured more of my country than I have.
Really? Classic.
I don't know.
I'm sure.
I haven't been through Louisiana much.
Okay. It's pretty nice down there.
If the crocodiles don't get you. Or the alligators, I guess.
Yeah, the alligators. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can, like, drive for an hour in a swamp, basically, like on a bridge. maybe not an hour, but a long time. It just feels like you're, I don't know, in some another universe, because you're just on a raised road in a swamp or on water. It's crazy.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely know there's some people that live out there where it's like the only way to and from their house is, you know, via an airboat or something.
Mm. Yeah, I can imagine. So wet. Do you have your fan on today?
I do not. Thank was it a big annoyance?
Oh my god!
In the last episode,
it was really painful.
Was it
really painful?
Oh no! It didn't come across too much in the recording or in the final episode. So you must have put a lot of effort into that.
Well, the main pain was that I couldn't use any of the silence deletion tools, so I had to just edit the whole thing manually. So it just took longer.
Oh no. I'm so sorry. You should have said something before the show started, just in case I did have it on.
No, yeah, I was thinking about it, but then I kind of got carried away with the other things we're talking about. if I had just started from, you know, from when I got the audio and doing it by hand, it doesn't actually take that long. It's just the fact that I tried so hard to use the automated tools to get rid of all the silence that it took me ages, but it was only because of that fact. So
yeah.
It's mostly my fault at persisting for so long and not just giving up straight away and doing it all normally. Manually. Yeah, like the right, noise
well,
print
make sure to-
I was taking just I think the fan's noise print was too varied to be accurate.
Right?
Yeah. So no matter what I did, there was always something that escaped the noise print. Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. Yeah, I won't do that again.
Okay.
I'll make sure it stays off.
Thanks.
Those dang tricky home automations.
Mm. Didn't hear any beeps or anything today.
Nope. Yeah. Nope, nothing. Nothing's coming on.
House has been all closed up.
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part. I will say that I don't know if it's a beta thing or not. I've got smart lights, you know, on the exterior of the house as well, along with my security cameras. And I set up an automation for the backyard. For at night when it's dark, if the camera detects motion back there, it turns a light on, just like a motion sensor light. And part of those automations is you can set it to like turn the lights back off after 5 or 10 minutes or whatever. And I did that. I have it just turn on for like 5 minutes if there's activity, but the lights never turn themselves back off. And I don't know if I'm hoping it's just a beta thing because I'd like to have that, but you don't want to leave your lights on all night because it attracts bugs and then you get spider webs all over the back of your house because they're trying to get the bugs.
And light pollution, I learned recently, is also a big problem with leaving outside lights on.
Oh, yeah?
Mm, yeah. I visited an observatory since we last spoke and... the astronomer gave quite the rant about light pollution and leaving outside lights on during the night.
Ah, okay. So were you just going on a tour or what was the occasion?
Yeah, just a tour out of interest. It was the night when the James Webb telescope images were released, so there was a bit of a buzz in the air for astronomy and just an hour's drive away from me. It's quite a good night.
Well, cool. Yeah, those were some impressive images.
Mm. Wow. What else could be leaving it, forcing your lights to stay on then? Is there some, like, a third-party app interfering with it or something like that?
So, I've never had luck with this automation. So, the chance of it being just the beta are pretty slim.
Mm.
But in the past, when I've tried to do similar... automations with an exterior camera turning a light on with motion, it used to work for me, but the light turning off after 5 or 10 minutes triggered the motion sensor on the camera again and the light would come back on immediately.
That's right, you've told me about this before. This is all coming back.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
But now it's not even turning off, so I don't know what's going on.
Mm.
I'm assuming that's a beta thing.
Yeah. So it's just a timer after it comes on that should turn it off.
Right. And I guess that's managed by my home hub, whichever hub is in control. So my Apple TV or my HomePod or whichever device it's defaulting to. I've got too many home hubs in the house.
I wonder how they decide which one is the master hub.
I don't know. Maybe most central or something?
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to ask you, have you ever owned the Link bracelet for the Apple Watch?
Yes. Yeah, I did the silly thing of, you know, I bought a Link bracelet when they were still $550 before the price got like cut in half.
Because you can alter the length of that at fairly small increments.
It's a really nice band. Yeah, the links are able to be individually removed with just a single button press. I love it. It's a really nice watch band and it's held up good. I had it with my Series 2, so I've had it a long time.
Okay. Maybe I could look into that then.
Yeah, they're much cheaper now.
You wouldn't still get them from Apple, would you?
Yeah, you can.
You can? Okay.
It's at least as far as I know. But they're not $550 anymore. They're like $250.
Oh, nice. And that would give me a 2-week return window as well. Might be worth checking out.
There you go. Thank you. Hey. Get a shot. They're very nice. You know, the only issue is that you can't get them wet. So you'd have to take your watch off before getting in the shower or something.
No, I do like to wear mine in the pool when we go. I don't normally go in there, wear a watch in the shower, but I do wear it swimming. That's like a main reason to have the watch on because I don't want to have a phone with me. Okay.
Yeah. Metal's not an option in those cases.
Neither's the leather loop, which I used to have and used to like.
Yeah, I really like a lot of their band materials, but I end up wearing some kind of sport band most of the time because I don't want to keep switching it out. Because I do wear mine in the shower.
Yeah.
I will say well, this is probably the opposite of what you need. I'll say the braided solo loops are nice, but that is not adjustable at all. So that's not going to help your problem.
Yeah, I'd have to buy the... No, yeah, that's not going to work at all. I think I've basically got that already. No, I guess the Velcro one's not really braided. It is similar, though.
The solo loops are you got to, like, buy the exact right size you need.
Yeah.
And they come in, like, a dozen sizes.
Yeah.
That's not going to help.
And I do find that if I'm doing any sort of exercise, my wrist can change diameter, like, quite a lot.
Oh, it, like, swells a little bit or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it seems like the band you have, the sport loop, would be your best bet.
Yeah, I know. And it has done me well for years already. I don't understand why it's causing me pain now.
Maybe you just need a new one.
New wrist.
Yeah, exactly. just a new loop. I don't understand how one could have worn in such a way that would now be causing an issue, but...
You know what I need? I need the little...
What's that?
I need to wear it around my neck. That would be so cool. I need a bracelet. No, bracelets for the wrist. A necklace. Apple Watch necklace.
Yeah, you can do that. I know we've talked about in the past. You could get a pocket watch chain for it.
Yeah, could also do that. What are the nurses call their thing that they wear?
The nurses?
Like a fob, yeah. Like a... Look up a nurse fob. I don't know why it's called nurse a fob. Fob. You'll recognize instantly, but you can get Apple Watch fobs.
Oh, those little clocks.
I suppose. Oh, yeah. I thought the fob referred to the bit that attached it to you. But, yeah, it always holds a clock of some sort, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I see. Yep. Yeah, that could work. Just pin it to your scrubs.
It's my new look.
Scrubs isn't a bad look. over him for a while.
You serious? Oh, right. In a hospital, yeah, but not day to day.
Yeah. No, not as like casual daily wear. But they are comfortable.
Oh yeah, I bet. Yeah, it's like wearing a muumuu.
Yeah, basically.
Loosey goosey.
I mean, I've got some like pajama sets that are basically scrubs.
Mm.
So
right.
Yeah, they're nice.
Pajama set, hey. I haven't had a set of pajamas since I was like a boy.
You think of like the stereotypical image of a person going to bed in like the button-up pajamas or like a nightcap. Like that's what I have.
Nice.
Is that?
I'm envious.
Something comfortable, casual to wear around the house when I wake up 2 minutes before my daily meeting. I gotta rush onto a call.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're pretty comfortable too.
I can imagine. I just wear like tracksuit shorts and a t-shirt. Usually, for efficiency's sake, just keep the t-shirt on that I wore during the day. And then when I wake up, I just chuck it in the wash. Put a new one on.
Yeah, there you go. That's really easy.
Circle of life for t-shirts.
Circle of life.
Huh. Hmm.
I was trying to scroll through my old Facebook photos and find a picture of me in scrubs and send you, but I can't find any.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I just found one. This is going to be great. You can include it in the show artwork because you're going to laugh at it and all the viewers are going to go, why is James laughing?
This is in the Discord?
I'm about to share it in there. This is my least favorite part of screen caps on a Mac.
Cool.
On Windows, when you do a screen capture, it automatically goes to your clipboard. Not so on a Mac. I bet I can set up some kind of shortcut to do that, though.
Oh, look at that pose. Amazing. And they are very colorful scrubs. Mm-hmm. I was picturing just like blue from top to bottom, but you know.
Well, those were not my day-to-day scrubs. That was specifically... This was actually, I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I worked in the same medical office as my mom,
mm-hmm.
and that was one of her backup pairs of scrubs that she kept in her office that I put on one day.
nice. Very fancy.
Mm-hmm.
I have the Mac tip of the year for you.
Okay.
All right, Command Shift 5.
Mm-hmm.
Click on Options. Mm-hmm. And then click Clipboard.
Okay, now tell me this. Because I don't use Command Shift 5, I use Command Shift 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the options have been set, if I use Command Shift 4, is that going to copy my clipboard?
I don't know. I only use Command Shift 5 now.
Oh, it did.
Oh, really? So, Command Shift 5 options,
yeah.
Configure Command Shift 4 as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Thank you, James. You are a lifesaver.
You are welcome.
It's very rare that I take a screenshot that I'm not doing it to immediately send somewhere. I rarely want to save those. So, the clipboard is perfect.
I never send to the clipboard, but I should because I don't want the file. I'm just putting it somewhere.
Right.
Ah.
Exactly. Gotten spoiled by Windows.